Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit, nonpartisan forum open to the public. I'm Gloria Duffy, President and CEO of the club. To learn more about events or membership, join us online at commonwealthclub.org.
Good afternoon, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, the place where you're in the know. Find us on the internet at commonwealthclub.org. My name is Bob Saldick, past chair of the Commonwealth Club's Board of Governors, and I will be your moderator for today's program. Now it is my distinct pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Senator Barbara Boxer. U.S. Senator Barbara Boxer elected to the Senate in 1993 after 10 years in the House of Representatives and 6 years on the Marin County Board of Supervisors, and now, of course, a candidate for re-election into the U.S. Senate. A few highlights. The first woman to chair the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works focused much of her committee work on climate change, transportation, and infrastructure. She fought to secure passage of the Water Resources Development Act and led the fight to pass it and to override a veto by George W. Bush. I guess it's George W. She wrote laws protecting 1 million acres of California wilderness, a champion of quality public education, a strong proponent of medical research, a leading defender of a woman's right to choose. Senator Boxer also serves on the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. She also chairs the Senate Select Committee on Ethics, making her the only sitting senator to hold two committee chairmanships. A member of the Democratic leadership in the Senate, serving as Chief Deputy Whip since 2005, Senator Boxer and her husband of 48 years have 2 children and 4 grandchildren. With great pleasure, we welcome Senator Barbara Boxer to the Commonwealth Club.
Thank you. Thank you for that incredible and warm applause. Thank you, Robert, for your introduction. And I'm so pleased to be here today at the Commonwealth Club to talk about jobs and the economy and California's future. I believe we are at a critical time in our nation's history because the decisions that we make today will determine whether we can keep the American dream alive for our children and our grandchildren tomorrow. We know that our country is just starting to emerge from the very worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. There are far too many people still out of work, and the pace of progress is too slow. And I don't sugarcoat that. We are facing challenges. I acknowledge them. And I'm determined to get our state and our nation on the right track. We didn't get here overnight, and we can't fix everything overnight. But I know if we take the right path, we will turn this economy around. And right now, our country has a very clear choice. And to me, something is very clear. We simply can't go back to the policies that got us into this mess. I served in the United States Senate because of the good people of California for 8 years with President Clinton and 8 years with President George W. Bush. So we could look at those 8-year periods to see what policies worked and what policies didn't work. During the Clinton administration, I supported budgets that created surpluses. There were smart investments in our people and tax cuts for working families. We created 23 million jobs, and we said goodbye to deficits. During the Bush administration, I opposed economic policies and budgets that failed to make smart investments and instead embraced trickle-down economics with huge tax cuts going to the wealthy few. And those policies left us with a $1.2 trillion deficit and only 1 million jobs created over 8 years, the worst job creation since Herbert Hoover. So we know what policies created 23 million new jobs and what policies created just 1 million jobs. We know what policies created surpluses, and we know what policies created deficits. And yet, there are those who want to go back to those old Bush economic policies that not only failed us, but brought us to the brink of collapse. We all remember those dark times in 08, when our economy was on the brink after years of unsupervised gambling on Wall Street. A shadow banking system had flourished, and it fueled an unsustainable housing bubble. Wall Street bankers deliberately created complex paper instruments that had no real value. Some were based on sliced and diced mortgages, many of which were overvalued. The Fed never policed subprime loans as it should have done under the law. In late 07 and early 08, the house of cards began to collapse. The housing bubble burst, mortgage lenders and financial institutions began to fail. The Federal Reserve had to intervene to try and keep credit flowing. Major financial institutions failed. Regulators had been asleep at the wheel. For example, they couldn't or wouldn't catch Bernie Madoff, even after many leads that practically led to his doorstep. Seriously, they couldn't or wouldn't catch him. The Wall Street debacle created fear that crippled our economy. Banks lost confidence and refused to lend. Consumers started to withdraw their money from money market funds in such large numbers that even money market funds were no longer safe. Without tools to handle this crisis, the Bush administration came to Congress for help in September 08. And I will share with you a day I will never forget. Secretary of the Treasury Paulson and Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke sat across from us senators, looked us in the eye, and said, "If you don't act, the economy will collapse. We will go into a Great Depression." The steps we took kept our economy from going off a cliff. The capital the government infused into the financial sector helped stop the panic that threatened to topple even healthy banks and financial institutions. And today we learn that nearly 70% of the assistance for the banks has been paid back to taxpayers. But it was too late to stop the Wall Street crisis from infecting the rest of the economy. Confidence plummeted, along with the housing prices. As subprime mortgages reset at higher interest rates, homes were lost to foreclosure. The stock market sank, and nationwide, 8.4 million jobs were lost in 08 and 09. It is almost too painful to look back at the start of what I call the Great Recession, the worst economic crisis of my lifetime and most of yours. But to understand where we are, we have to understand where we've been. This crisis left us with two choices. We could sit back and watch our economy implode, or we could do everything to try to put out the flames. And although much remains to be done, we all know that. We have work to put out the flames. We took steps that have helped stabilize the economy, and I'll give you a couple of examples. First, we gave the previous administration the tools to stabilize the banking system that I described before. Next, we passed the Economic Recovery Act, which is currently investing $85 billion in grants, loans, and tax relief for California. And to put that number into context, $85 billion is the equivalent of the entire California state budget. So that infusion of funds has meant a great deal to our state. According to the Council of Economic Advisers, the Economic Recovery Act has saved or created 350,000 jobs in California. And I have met those workers across our state on the 405 freeway in Los Angeles, where 18,000 Californians will be put to work. Here in the Bay Area at Doyle Drive, where 1,900 people are already at work. At the Caldecott Tunnel, where 4,000 Californians will be put to work adding a fourth bore. Just a few blocks from here, at the Transbay Terminal, where a $400 million investment will employ 48,000 Californians, building a world-class hub for regional transit and high-speed rail. And I have met on the beat police in Fresno in the Inland Empire who would have been laid off without the Recovery Act. I've met workers at the Sacramento Airport and job trainees in Bakersfield. Now, I know there are some who say the Recovery Act hasn't created any jobs. I wish they would come with me and shake the hands of those workers. Or they should talk to Mark Zandi. Remember him? Mark Zandi was the economic advisor to John McCain, and Alan Blinder, who's on the Democratic side. Blinder is a former Fed chairman, vice chairman, and as I said, Zandi advised John McCain. A few weeks ago, they released a report. It found that the actions we took, including the Economic Recovery Act, helped prevent the loss of millions of jobs. 8 million, to be exact, and they modeled this. So imagine, we had already lost 8 million jobs. If we had done nothing, it would have been an additional 8 million jobs. We passed the HIRE Act, H-I-R-E, which stands for Hiring Incentives to Restore Employment. It cuts taxes for companies who hire unemployed people. And it replenished the Highway Trust Fund to keep a continuous flow of funds to build our roads, bridges, and transportation systems. That extension protected the jobs of an estimated 100,000 workers in our state. We cracked down on Wall Street's reckless gambling by enacting a Wall Street reform bill. It curbs abuses and it shines a bright light into the shadow banking system by setting tough new rules for markets that used to operate in the dark. It puts a new cop on the beat for the first time ever in the history of the country to protect consumers, setting up a new consumer watchdog agency to stop abusive practices by credit card companies, mortgage lenders, and others. And I was proud that the Senate adopted my amendment 96-1. That's a breakthrough. that said, no more taxpayer bailouts ever. If there are problems in the future, then the financial sector is going to have to pay the bill. You know, we also work to support those who have lost their jobs during this great recession. We extended unemployment benefits. And a lot of people say, well, does that really help? It helps the families of the unemployed, that is for sure. But it also helps the local economy because those dollars are spent on groceries and other necessities. And just a couple of weeks ago, we found out that Speaker Pelosi called back the House and we took action to preserve up to 160,000 education jobs across the country and about 16,000 education jobs, teacher jobs, in California, just as students are heading back to school. I'm really glad we did that. The last thing we needed was to see those pink slips to 160,000 teachers become a reality. I'm really glad we made the breakthrough. And just Friday, the Education Department announced that it sent $1.2 billion to our state because of that action. By the way, that teacher bill, it was fully paid for, and you know how we did it? We closed tax loopholes for companies who ship jobs overseas. I think that was a good thing to do. Pay for the teachers by stopping tax breaks to companies who ship jobs overseas. So here's what I want to finish with. It's what's next. There's so much we still have to do. I told you, I don't sugarcoat the situation. We want to continue to save and create jobs, turn our economy around, and I'm going to give you five actions I believe we should take, a lot of which we're already working on, and here they are. First, we must ensure that our great state is the hub of the new clean energy economy. The world is going green, and America must lead the way. And if we don't, China will lead the way. And if we don't, Europe will lead the way, and we will lose the jobs. Clean energy technologies should be made in America. And those are the words that I want to see. And we will create the innovations that the whole world wants to buy. And we'll stop shipping jobs overseas and start shipping products overseas. And that's what we have to do at this point. So I'm proud of our state, but our state's law is under attack, AB 32. And if I could say there will be, am I permitted, Robert, to talk about a proposition that's on the ballot? Robert?
Absolutely.
Thank you. I want to be careful that I follow the rules of the Commonwealth Club. So there's a proposition on the ballot, Prop 23. And if I could just say this, it would stop us from moving forward on clean energy jobs legislation here in California. It would overturn our laws. And the one bright spot we've had here in this recession has been clean energy jobs. 10,000 new businesses, 125,000 new jobs. Why on earth would we turn our back on that and pass Prop 23? And it is being funded by coal companies and oil companies from out of our state. We must take a stand. Thank you. We must take a stand and say no to them and yes to our own future. Now, as we look around on ways to stimulate the economy, we need to look outside to venture capitalists, because they have billions of dollars, frankly, trillions, to invest. And John Doerr, who is this, how many of you heard of John Doerr? John, a lot of you have. He is one of our nation's top venture capitalists, a man whose eye for the next big thing helped launch Google and Amazon. So he knows what he's talking about. He said the investment that will flow into clean energy will dwarf the amount invested in high tech and biotech combined. So we are poised for this great economic recovery, but we have to set the stage and have the policies that will encourage those investments. You know what he said? He said, quote, "Going green may be the largest economic opportunity of the 21st century." He said, "It is the mother of all markets." So this is one of the reasons I'm working so hard. And my committee has voted out two really good clean energy bills, but they've been filibustered, and we can't get past the 60 votes yet. But we are working on it, and there are other ways that we can move. But I will tell you this. Everybody's looking at California, so our vote on this Prop 23 is very, very important. And we defeat that, I think we send a signal that we are moving forward. So that's the first thing that I want to do, make California the hub of the new clean energy economy. Second, we must protect our coastal economy. The oil spill disaster in the Gulf has greatly harmed that region's multi-billion dollar coastal economy. We saw it. Here in California, our coastal economy generates $23 billion in economic output every year, and it supports 390,000 jobs in fishing industry, tourism, and recreation. That is an economic resource that is too valuable to put at risk unnecessarily. And here's what I need you to remember. We could save all the proven oil reserves off the West Coast, that's 410 million barrels, simply by increasing fuel economy by 1 mile per gallon over 3 years. That's why we can't risk our coast and all those jobs, because we can get the equivalent of all the oil that is out there just by a little bit of better fuel economy. So drill, baby, drill, when you hear it, it may be a catchy bumper sticker, but our longstanding bipartisan commitment to protecting our coast is a wise economic and environmental decision. So that's the second thing we have to do. I should add that Senator Feinstein and I teamed up, and we have the Boxer-Feinstein legislation that will permanently protect our coast. Right now, it's protected to 2017, but we need to make that long-term commitment. Because remember, fisheries, recreation, tourism, and we value the jobs that come from those. And people won't make those investments if they think the coast is at risk. So it is an economic issue. Third, we have to ensure that small businesses have access to credit in these tough times. I don't know if you know this, but 64% of all new jobs over the last 15 years were created by small business. So we have to support them. And there's a great bill on the Senate floor right now. When I go back, we are looking for one more vote to break the filibuster. One. If we get that vote, we will have a very good bill on its way to the president's desk that would set up a deficit-neutral $30 billion fund that will go to the mid-sized banks, the community banks, to lend to small businesses who are qualified. And that fund will be leveraged to $300 billion and between 500,000 and 1 million new jobs. Deficit neutral. We can do these things if we're smart. We need that one more vote. That bill also has $12 billion in tax incentives for small business. So I'm really hoping for good news there. We have to work together and put partisan differences aside. This is a tough time, and this bill will help us. So I'm going to work my heart out for this one when I get back. Four, we have to make our roads and our bridges safer. This is America. We don't want bridges falling down, which we know we've seen. And we need to build transit systems because people want to get out of their cars. They need alternatives. It's a win-win for everybody. And it creates construction jobs. And our construction industry is hurting, the housing construction industry. I've met so many workers. They're just out of jobs. So we need to build these highways, bridges, and transit systems. Since I came to the Senate, we've doubled the amount of federal money coming to California for transportation. And as the chairman of the Environment and Public Works Committee, we'll be writing a new transportation bill. And I wanted to tell you, and I've named it MAP 21, Moving Ahead for Progress in the 21st Century. But a great idea came from Los Angeles, from Mayor Villaraigosa. His idea is called 3010. Los Angeles County voted to fund a transportation initiative through the sales tax, a half a cent. And they voted for 12 very important transportation projects, transit projects. And the idea is that this funding would come in over a 30-year time frame, and they'd build these projects over 30 years. So the mayor and I were talking, and he said to me he had this great idea, which is if the federal government could help them up front, accelerate the funds, in other words, fast forward the funds, we could build these, all these projects in 10 years. And we could create many more jobs quicker. And right now, because of these tough times, these bids are coming in lower. We'll save taxpayer money. And that gave me an idea, which I shared with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, and they like it, which is a section of our bill dedicated to how we can leverage the local and state dollars and help move these projects faster. So look for that when we write that new important transportation bill. Creating a 21st century transportation system, including transit, is absolutely essential. And just being over here at that new Transbay terminal was so exciting, realizing that it's not only going to be a place that's going to work to get our people into trains and buses and everything else, but it just is a community center. So there are new ways to think about the things that we're doing. And last, my fifth idea that I'm working on, which I talked about a little bit, is to stop giving any tax breaks to companies who ship jobs overseas. Why should we in any way reward a company that says, well, we're going to shut down our plant over here and we're going to open up, let's say, Malaysia, and then we're going to get the labor there and we're going to take those products and bring them right back to sell them to our families here. That should not be rewarded. We have to give those tax breaks to companies who produce products right here in California and in America. So, in conclusion, I'm going to give you a multiple choice test on everything I said. But before I do, we are at a critical time in our history, and our country has a clear choice. Do we return to the past policies of the Bush years, or do we move forward to create jobs and turn our economy around? The policies of today and tomorrow mean jobs right here in America, with small business leading the way in hiring again. They mean a coastal economy that is safe from destruction. They mean a clean energy economy that is first in the world, and an infrastructure that is second to none. And they mean policies that do reward the companies that produce jobs right here. That's what that five-point plan is about. We can't forget the tough lessons that we learned. It's hard to look back. It's painful. But we need to be honest about what happened and what went wrong. And we know trickle-down economics, giving the breaks to the billionaires, to the largest corporations, doesn't work. Failing to make smart investments in our people, it doesn't work. Shipping jobs overseas doesn't work. And without sensible regulation, middle-class families lose. So we have to move forward with clear policies that will create jobs and make the words "Made in America" a reality once again. Thank you so very much. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Our thanks to U.S. Senator Barbara Boxer for her comments this afternoon. It's now time for our audience question period, and we have a lot of questions. you touched on the economy in a whole variety of ways, and I guess we have so many questions about it. One that sums a lot of them up is this one: how can we get President Obama to listen to Paul Krugman?
I don't know the answer to that question. I think the president takes into account all the various recommendations by various economists, and I couldn't really answer how to get him to listen. I would say, as someone who had my degree in economics, I read everybody, and we have to do the best we can do under the circumstances we have to deal with, knowing how many votes we have to get to move forward. And so I think the Krugman idea of more stimulus is a very good idea. The situation is, how do you get that to move? And that's why I talked about the small business bill, which will leverage funds, but it's deficit neutral. That's why I talked about clean energy, which will bring in huge amounts of stimulus from the private sector investments, because we really have to make sure that we consider the deficits as well as the jobs. And I will tell you this, we can create these jobs and still, it seems to me, do it in a way that's fiscally responsible. That's the plan I laid out. Nothing in my plan would add to the deficits. We can do this if we're smart, and we can also shift funding from things that aren't creating jobs to things that are creating jobs.
There's a whole flock of questions about how Congress is working. And I'm not sure how to summarize them, but let me read one to you. Given the recent abuse of the filibuster, can we eliminate the filibuster in the next Congress? Would you vote to support that? Would you vote to support other structural changes in the Congress to make it more successful and more rewarded and approved, appreciated?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a complicated question. It seems like an easy one, but I will tell it to you straight from the shoulder. The way our founders envisioned our nation was that the House would be able to move things quickly and the Senate would have to be more deliberative, and they built it into the system. However, there has been a huge abuse of the filibuster. It used to be saved, really, for, you know, very critical issues that spoke to the heart and soul of the nation. Now it's used for a motion to adjourn. I mean, it's just gotten out of hand. And there's been so many in the last couple of years. We have done a lot. I mean, I could go through chapter and verse. After 100 years of trying, we got a health care bill through. We got we definitely moved forward in education by eliminating the middleman in the student loan column. That was a hard thing to do. We were able to do equal pay for equal work, pass the Lilly Ledbetter law. You know, we put some controls on tobacco, and I could go, and I have the list, and I could go on. I don't think you're that interested in hearing the whole list. But the point is, it has been difficult. And so here's my view, having been in the minority and having been in majority. I think We need to reform the filibuster. I think people should have to stand on their feet all night if they want a filibuster. I mean, that, I think, should be done. And secondly, I think we should change the 60 votes to 55 because, yeah, it started at 67. It went down to 60. I think it would still preserve the rights of the minority if it was at 55. That's how I feel about it.
There are a whole host of questions about the economy and the effect of the Gulf oil spill. So let me read this one to you. In the wake of the Gulf oil spill, this seems the perfect time to host another White House conference on the oceans, as you did in the 1990s with Congressman Farr, then with President Clinton. What are your thoughts on restoring ocean health, especially here in California?
Well, I'll start with my very important part of my economic plan of protecting the coast. The first thing we have to do is protect our coast, because if we don't and we take our eye off that and the sentiment changes and suddenly we're really at great risk, then any conference we would hold today on the health of the ocean would not be very meaningful. So I think, to me, the most important thing to do is to pass this Boxer-Feinstein legislation that says to our whole country on the West Coast, and by the way, it takes in the whole West Coast, and we have the support of the four senators, two from Washington, two from Oregon, and we have Senator Feinstein and I writing this. We are united in this, and I think if we send that message, that's a very important thing. Protect the coast from any future oil drilling and terrible, terrible accidents such as the one that we saw. But I think, you know, having a conference on the oceans is good. It's a good thing to do. We should do it. But we're under siege right now from the big oil companies, and we really have to make our stand. You know, I would have thought after the BP spill, you know, we'd be in a better place. But there's still political maneuvering to drill off our coast. So I can't stress that enough. I have a bill to protect the oceans with Sam Farr. It's a good bill, and we're going to push it. I have bills with Lynn Woolsey to set up marine sanctuaries. We have a number of them, which are very important. So I'll be doing all that. But again, to me, the most important thing I can do now is work with my colleagues to protect our coast forever, because it is our responsibility to do that.
One of the issues which is getting a lot of attention in this area is the high-speed rail project. Let me read this question to you. I cannot support anyone who would support the high-speed rail project as it is presently constituted, gouging out the heart of the peninsula, the heart of residential communities in the peninsula, and diminishing the quality of life for 500,000 residents. Given that the Legislative Analyst's Office, the State Auditor, and the Berkeley Transportation Institute have called into question the ridership and financing, the very basis of Prop 1A. Have you reconsidered your position?
Let me tell you that I was a county supervisor for 6 years, and I respect the local jurisdiction's ability to take part in zoning, where routes go, where stations go, where housing goes, where commercial development goes. This is not something I get involved in as a United States senator. I totally respect the local communities, and I think their voice should be listened to. We can change the routes. That's not impossible. I've seen it done before and make everybody happy with it. So the people of this state voted overwhelmingly for high-speed rail. Going ahead and looking ahead to the future, if it's done right, it's an enormous asset. If you go to other countries, they have it. It's working. The people love it. But there's no reason why we can't do it the right way, and local voices and local communities have to play a role, and it should be placed in a place that works. That's how I feel.
Just to prove that we have all parts of the community represented, in the light of the effect you love, wasting taxpayer money, are there any government programs you could see yourself eliminating to reduce national debt?
Well, the biggest one is to end the wars, because it's costing us a fortune. And that's the biggest one. Another way is to make sure that we don't get ripped off by government contractors who sometimes charge a fortune. That's tens of billions of dollars. Another way is to make sure that everyone pays their taxes, their fair share. That's many more billions of dollars. The other way is let's not give subsidies now to companies who ship jobs overseas and take those funds and give it to people who create jobs here. And we shouldn't be subsidizing big oil anymore. I mean, they're doing pretty well, aren't they? And so we keep subsidizing them. But I have a whole list of more things, but that gives you an idea. I think I've come up with about $3 trillion worth of cuts over 10 years that we can do. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I wanted to mention, the biggest tax cut in history was in the Economic Recovery Act. I wanted to mention that. The Economic Recovery Act had a few different parts. One part was infrastructure, which I talked about visiting all those folks who are now at work. The other part was tax breaks to working people who got quite a bit back in their paychecks. So I was proud to vote for $1 trillion worth of tax cuts to people who need it, not to people who are billionaires and millionaires. Thank you. One of those people just applauded me. Thank you very much.
We have a whole range of questions about Iraq and Afghanistan. This questioner asks, what is Congress's role in extracting us from Iraq and Afghanistan? Why is nothing being done?
Well, I would like to say that today the president announced that all the combat troops have been taken out of Iraq and are coming home. That's important. And that they will all be out of there. The residual forces that will be left will be aimed at al-Qaeda. Now in Afghanistan, I have asked continually, as I did in the Iraq situation, that there be an exit strategy, that it be in writing, that there be conditions that are shown as to when the troops will come home, and we're going to have to push hard. I think the president, you know, wants to do it, and he said he's going to start bringing the troops home next year, but we don't have yet the exit strategy we need. Here's my view. I believe in nation helping, not nation building. What we need to do is help nations get on their feet, help them protect their families. But we can't take over these countries and run them. And, yeah, it just seems to me we need to have that rebuilding going on right here in America today. We need that rebuilding right here in America today.
We're kind of jumping around, but there's a lot of subjects you've brought up.
I did. They did.
So the immigration question,
yes,
is sort of a big question in California and in Arizona and around the country. A couple of questions about that. How do you feel about the California National Guard working with our Border Patrol for the continuing problems of non-documented immigrants and drug trafficking? Another one. Why isn't the immigration
problem
being handled?
What could we do? Just one at a time? Could we do one at a time?
What?
Could we do one at a time? Can I answer the first one?
Yeah, they're sort of the same question, but go
ahead. Okay. National Guard. What the National Guard does when they are called into Border Patrol is they take the Border Patrol agents who were doing administrative work and free them up to go down to the border. And I definitely support that because I think you really need a lot of training to go down to the border. So the National Guard frees up the people behind the desks. Now, if there are more National Guard, they need to be trained before they go down to the border. But let me just talk about immigration reform for a minute. There's only one way we're going to resolve it. And that's when we all come to the table, okay, and we say, people agree, you have to have control of the border, you also have to have an answer to what you're going to do with the people who are here, who are living in the shadows, who either are all going to be deported, 11 million, that's ridiculous, never going to happen, and what are you going to do with the employers? So we've got to resolve it. We need comprehensive immigration reform. Seems to me people say, yes, border security and a path to legality. We come to the center, we meet there, and we write a bill that's smart. Now, a couple of people have actually done it before, and I voted for it a couple of times. It was at one point called Kennedy-McCain, and at one point it was called Kennedy-Specter. And those were good bills. They had a couple of issues in them that were very tough and never got resolved. Filibuster ensued, not surprising, I'm sure, to you, and we fell short of the 60 votes. But we have got to deal with this, and comprehensive immigration reform is supported by about 70% of the people in our state and even countrywide, because they know, in reality, you've got to deal with all of this. And so that, I think, is the major issue, and I'm working for that. I think it's very important that we do it. There are very good bills, the DREAM Act, which deals with young people who were brought here when they were babies, who are really smart and want to go into the military, want to go to college, a way to help them do that. I'm all for that. There's the Ag Jobs Bill that was a Feinstein-Boxer bill. It's a very important bill, and it would say to people who are working in the fields, you can come out of the shadows. If you've had a good record for 2 years, you can work for a few more years and get to the back of the line and get yourself legal. And these are the things that we need to do. Because right now, if you have Arizona coming up with a bill, it's divisive. A group of people feel that they are being targeted. They're very upset. The police, a lot of them don't like it because they say people aren't going to cooperate with crime. Some of the police do like it. And the last thing I'd say is there's a couple of programs that are working now where local communities can already work with immigration authorities. One is called the Secure Communities Act. And it gives the local people a chance to work with the federal authorities. So, you know, it seems to me it's a better way to deal with it other than each state writing a law. There's lawsuits. It goes to the courts. It takes forever. And in the meantime, we have a problem. I guess I have one more thing. USC just did a study and said if we had comprehensive immigration reform, we would create 25,000 new jobs here in California because people would come out of the shadows. They'd be more part of the community. They'd be spending the money. They'd be making a little bit more, and they wouldn't be fearful. And I think that's an interesting point. Comprehensive immigration reform is, in fact, an economic issue. Even the Cato Institute, which I normally don't agree with because it tears down Social Security and Medicare, think that comprehensive immigration reform makes sense.
Several of our questioners wonder about the Tea Party movement. And maybe that's enough of a question, but remarkably, they pulled together 300,000 people in Washington a couple of days ago and had a quiet conference during that day. I mean, it wasn't crazy as people feared it would be. What's your feeling about the Tea Party movement, and where's it going to end up? What's the impact going to be on the upcoming election?
Well, I've tried to find out exactly what it is because I've looked up to see what are their tenets, and they really don't have any. They just, some of them are have one issue and others have another issue. I can't speak for the Tea Party, but I have to say this. I like it when people get involved. I don't like it when they get together and the messages are divisive for our nation. So I'm glad to hear you say it was a pleasant rally. I don't know. I didn't follow it. But the bottom line is people get together and they have a political opinion. Then it's up to everybody else who may not agree with them to get involved, because this is a country of, by, and for the people. And we can't sit back. We have to get involved. And so what's the impact on the election? I think that everybody should understand that the people who go and vote in great numbers, they're going to be the ones who win. Because I've looked at polls for every race you can imagine, and the outcome is quite different depending on the turnout. So I've always said to people, this is your country. You got to make your voice heard. Is everybody perfect on the ballot? No. You probably would only think the perfect person is you. Because that's obviously true. I mean, we see things our way, but we may not find a candidate that's perfect. But I would tell you, when I was a little girl, my mother was brought to this country as a baby. So she's a naturalized citizen. And she was so in love with this country. And she would take me by the hand every voting day. And she'd pull that little curtain around. And in those days, we had the, well, they still have in New York, where I grew up, the little levers that you push. And she would let me push a lever down. And she'd let me stay in that booth, and it was the most exciting thing for me. And she said, "This is America. This is what it's about." So people who get involved, you know, if they have a message I don't agree with, I'll say if I don't agree with it. But people getting involved in the process, hey, we should all get involved in the process. I think it's very important that we do. However we do it, voting is the most important way, though, I think.
You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program, and our guest today is U.S. Senator Barbara Boxer, who is sharing her thoughts on jobs, the economy, California's future, and almost everything else. Let's turn to an inevitable question, the Muslim Center in New York. Where do you come out on that debate?
I come out in the same place I came out on the question about zoning on the high-speed rail, and this is why. When I was a county supervisor, we had a lot of controversial developments come before us. I didn't have a U.S. senator telling me what should go where and how it should go. I think this is an issue for the people of New York to decide, just like where we decide to put a high-speed rail terminal or anything else. Now, the people of New York suffered mightily after 9/11, and they're going to let their opinion be known, and I will support their opinion. I'm not going to put my nose in it. It doesn't belong there. It is the role of the local people to make this decision. I feel very strongly about that.
Cannabis. The questions are, do you believe that legal and taxed cannabis in California could be part of the solution to helping with California's budget deficit? Another question, why don't you support legalizing pot? It's drugs and immigration that's causing the problems of our border, crossing what? The problems of our borders.
Whoa. Okay, why don't I just talk about the initiative, because I think getting into the borders. I don't support this initiative. I haven't, because I've talked to Mothers Against Drunk Driving. I've talked to doctors. I've talked to police officers. And I believe that the laws we have currently are okay. We have the medical marijuana. If a doctor stands behind a prescription, then I think it ought to be legal. But I personally don't see how we would be a better state, honestly, if our kids have ready and available access to marijuana. It's just the way I feel. And I know a lot of people disagree with me, and a lot do agree. I don't know where it all comes out, and we'll find out. But I just think, you could make the argument on a financial basis, but I think there's more to it than that. And I just don't think it moves us forward. I've read about Netherlands and how they're pulling back on what they're doing there. I worry about it for our young people. So I'm not going to vote for it.
Question from a young person in the audience. What course of action would a seasoned and well-respected political veteran such as yourself recommend a young man or woman, to be politically correct, take in order to begin pursuing a life of politics in order to make a positive impact on our country? Is it a fulfilling and rewarding lifestyle? Please forgive the spelling errors.
Whoever wrote that, I love you for your courage of even considering going into this field of work. I do. I'm very proud that I chose this life, because I started off in a different direction. I told you I was an economics major. I was a stockbroker at one point. Don't hold that against me. I was a newspaper reporter, which I enjoyed. But when I had my family, I looked around my beautiful community, and there were some things that needed to be fixed. There was absolutely no after school for the children. Some of the streets were not safe. And so I decided to get involved. And it was a momentous decision. I didn't expect it to lead all the way to the United States Senate, believe me. But what I found so rewarding, so whoever the gentleman or lady is who wrote that, I'm speaking to you now, what I found so rewarding is you can make a difference. But I also found out that the best ideas come from the people you represent. So don't think that when you're running, you have all the answers. You don't. I mean, I've been so lucky that 1,000 of my provisions have become enacted. And such things as after-school care, the first ever federal after-school program. Yes, it's helping 1.7 million kids stay safe after school in the state, 170,000 here in California. Out of gangs, out of trouble, still learning after school. And then when I found out there was no combat casualty care center that was comprehensive for our wounded warriors coming home from the wars in California, and that their families had to go all the way to Walter Reed across the country, I was able to get a site designated in San Diego, and now it's there. And our soldiers, we have such a large percentage of the wounded, probably over 20%, they can be there with their families. So there's things that you can do that just make your heart swell, that you feel so good about. And there's also a lot of frustration. And so you have to have the ability to learn to be patient and to learn that change isn't that easy. It takes time. And I think if you have those qualities, which I had to learn, I wasn't born with those qualities. You have to learn how to do it. And don't take these attacks that you get personally. You know, like the guy wrote that note, whatever it was, I forgot already. You know, it's a slam, but it's okay. You know, it's okay. And don't take it personally, because you fight for certain things, you believe in certain things, and if somebody doesn't agree with you, it's okay. And don't expect people to agree with you on everything. They're not going to. Don't give up hope. Just keep on pushing. And, you know, and the moment comes when people will make their decision. But just do your best. So whoever wrote that, I hope you will think about what I said. I hope you'll start maybe volunteering in the community, because the way to get started is for people to look at you and know you can get things done, they can trust you, and suddenly your leadership skills will develop. And I'll see you in the Senate.
You're in for a difficult race in the Senate, we understand, and the polls are pretty close if they're accurate. How worried are you about winning this election?
I want to stay in the Senate to continue my work, because I still want to do this work. And so, of course, I'm giving it everything I have. The good news is that I have so many people that are helping me. And that means everything to me, because I can't do it alone. It's a big state, 37, 38 million people you're dealing with. So you really need people to stand up and help, and they are. I have about 100,000 donors, which is remarkable. 90% of my contributors give less than $100, and we've raised many millions. So there's some rewarding things that are going on. We have 900,000 people on our email list, so if anyone's listening and they want to sign up, they can do that by going to barbaraboxer.com. So am I worried? No, I don't worry. I just work hard, and I don't take a breath. And then I tell my husband on election day, if I don't talk to you for a few days, just understand that I need a rest for a few days, you know, because I give it all I have. And the reason I can do it is I believe in this state. I love this state. This country gave me everything. And I'm sure 90% of you out there or more feel the same way. Gave me everything. My mother, I told you before, she was born abroad. She came here as a little girl. I'm a first-generation American on that side. And I went through public schools, kindergarten, through college. And I debate with people who went to the fanciest schools and cost a lot of money. and I'm able to hold my own and fight for this state. So this state and this country, they've just given me everything. So I don't want to walk away now that we're in a tough time. I want to get us back on track. And I think at the end of the day, and I hope that in this little talk that I gave you, I think I laid out why the choice is really clear. So I'm not worried. I'm excited. This is one of the clearest elections in the nation. And people won't, let's just put it this way. It's not about hair. It's about real issues that matter.
I knew you'd kill that question, so let me give you an easy one. The opinion polls show the approval of the Senate is at 12%. What are your comments on the lowest of the low?
Well, let me talk to that young man who wrote that note. If you want high approvals, don't go into my world. Because in tough times, it's understandable. You're not going to get it. And so all I could say is I understand why this is the case. I think whoever brought up the filibuster was right. That's hurting us. We must do some reform there. We, frankly, don't do that great a job of telling the people when we get something done, we just go on to the next thing. It's our fault. But times are tough. They are tough. And all I can do is say, I accept it. I hear you. I understand. But I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep on doing what it takes to get us back on track.
What about the Bush tax cuts? Are they going to get rescinded?
I think the Bush tax cuts for the middle class will absolutely be extended. But we're not going to see them extended to the billionaires. I just don't see that. It doesn't make any sense.
I knew you'd say that.
Robert, you want to change places?
No. The loyal opposition has decided that obstructionism is good politics. Does the Democratic leadership really intend to sit back and let them continue?
We want to keep on working to get things done. I mentioned before, when we get back, we have this very critical small business jobs bill on the floor of the Senate. It has universal support, unusually broad support from working people and from the Chamber of Commerce. And yet, we've had a hard time breaking the filibuster. But I'm hopeful that we will push hard and we will not give up and we will allow the American people to see who's on their side and who's stopping a bill that has universal support, because we need the 500,000 jobs that will come from this bill. So speaking to you from my heart, I'm saying what we need to do is just get back there and fight to keep adding jobs and not allow this debate to go unnoticed. We're in competition with a lot of other things, but we have to fight to get things done.
Another question on immigration. Why not reduce legal immigration until the economy will support more workers, until the employment reaches more historically normal levels? Reduce legal immigration.
I think if we can wrap our arms around the illegal immigration, I think that would be what we should do. I really do believe that, because I will tell you right now, if you talk to some of our Silicon Valley friends who are hiring, in many cases, they are looking for American workers who are trained and have the degrees, and they often can't find them. So if you suddenly shut off the pool of people who could come in and fill in, and I'm not talking about jobs where there's a lot of pool of workers, so you just can't shut things down. You have to be smart about it.
Here's a good question. Do we need, in the country, a basic education in ethics on a national level?
Oh. Where's that young man who asked me that question? As the chairman of the Ethics Committee, and my vice chair is a Republican, and we get along really well, what we have decided is when new members come into the Senate, to sit down and go through the rules, what's a conflict of interest, what's an appearance of a conflict of interest, to make people understand, all of us, that if we have a question, if something looks questionable, write the letter to the ethics staff. So all I could say is I'm not an expert, but I know that if you talk to 6 different people, they'll have a different view of what's ethical. But there should be a bottom line understanding. If there's, for example, a financial conflict of interest with a member of Congress taking a vote, they shouldn't make that vote. To me, it seems pretty obvious. But to them, it may not be obvious. So I think the questioner had a good idea, which is, how do we make sure that we look at the issue of what's ethical and what isn't? And I am, in my own way, trying to do that in the United States Senate. It's a good question. I wish I had a broader answer.
No, the Democrat-Republican question. Why don't the Democrats play hardball, one, and two, say how unpatriotic the Republicans are? In effect, the Republicans would rather see this country in economic ruin than see Obama administration policies help this nation effectively address its economic woes. Is that a fair question?
Well, that's a comment from this person who believes this. And I would say, whoever wrote that, you should get your friends involved in this election, because what you're saying is very important. My answer is, I've never been known as someone who didn't play hardball, so just watch me. I don't know what else. I've always played it. I tell it like it is. I'm not afraid to do that. I figure you got to tell people the truth. They deserve it. They deserve to know the truth. And you don't have to sugarcoat it.
What is the possibility of passing federal cap-and-trade legislation in 2010 and beyond? What is it?
Well, right now we've been rejected twice with our climate change bills. Our latest version is called reduce and refund. Reduce the pollution, we say to the polluters, and refund those monies to the people so that as we shift to the clean energy, we'll be able to make sure it doesn't cost more. So as far as I'm concerned, we tried it twice. The last time, the Republicans boycotted my committee, and they have since boycotted Jeff Bingaman's committee. People need to know this. There are people who still say there is no climate change. We now see that an ice sheet broke off the shelf in Greenland, is 4 times the size of Manhattan, and it's going to melt into the sea. And it's going to take a year to do that. We saw fires in Russia they couldn't contain and flooding in Pakistan. And, you know, the fact is we could sit back until we had 100% conviction that man-made activities are causing this, but the scientists are 90% sure. So I think it's important to take an insurance policy and get with it. Why should we not step up to the plate here? We are importing $1 billion worth of oil every single day. Think about it. Think about what it would mean to have $365 billion here at home, given whether you're worried about the deficit or whether you're worried about giving funding to countries who don't really like us that much. So bottom line here is that we need to do everything we can, because it's going to create jobs here, it's going to reduce pollution here, it's going to help our budget here, and it's a win-win-win. So we're going to keep up the fight. We don't have the votes yet.
Unfortunately, we reached a time in our program when we have time for only one last question. This questioner says, tomorrow is a big debate for you against Carly Fiorina, your opponent. Why do you think you will be a better U.S. senator than your opponent?
I'm going to let the people decide that, but I hope everybody listens in because it is one of the clearest choices in the nation. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming today. I'm very grateful.
Our thanks to Senator Barbara Boxer, who is running this November for her fourth term in the United States Senate. We also thank our audiences here and on the radio, television, and the Internet. I'm Bob Saldick, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, the place where you're in the know, is adjourned.